It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As part of our ongoing conversations about homelessness, we examine the efforts of a statewide poverty-fighting network. It's 16 community action agencies working together on this issue. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at any point. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Brad Paul is executive director of the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. Brad, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks for having me, and thanks for your interest in this topic.
Yes, let's begin with poverty. There's a new UW Extension report saying poverty in Wisconsin remains higher than it was two decades ago. What is typically driving poverty rates in the state?
Well, from what I've read in the report, I think they get it right. It's really a loss of manufacturing jobs. With that, a decline in union membership. This puts pressure on wages, downward pressure. Then there's also a continued sort of a historic retreat from the safety net. During the pandemic, we saw the federal government reinvest in emergency relief, rent assistance, food assistance, and we actually saw the poverty rates dip. As that retreats, we're seeing those spike up again. So I think the report gets it right. The report also talks a little bit about how we compare to our neighbors and their marginal differences. Minnesota has a better track record, and that's a result of their public policies. But this is a national problem, and the margins, as I said, are very, very slim from state to state. This is an ongoing historic problem that we've yet to address.
You mentioned the help during the pandemic. How did the expanded child tax credit that's expired, how did that affect child poverty?
It resulted in those numbers dropping pretty substantially. We had the child tax credit. We had emergency rent assistance. We had increases in emergency food supplementals through the food share program. All of that combined made a significant difference in the lives of Wisconsinites.
How does inflation factor into this and the overall increased cost of living? How does that create financial challenges for families?
Well, inflation's tough for everyone, but like so much, it disproportionately affects low-income families. When you're spending more on food or rent, you're making difficult choices about which priorities you need to address.
African Americans and Indigenous people experience homelessness at higher rates than white people, and that's from the National Alliance to End Homelessness. How is your state network seeking to reduce generational cycles of poverty and poverty in historically marginalized communities?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Wisconsin has a really regrettable track record on when we talk about racial disparities, some of the highest in the country. We're trying to take a broad, comprehensive view, try to look at the systems that feed into deep poverty and disproportionately affect certain communities. You know, one thing that I think is important for us to think about when we talk about the relationship between poverty and homelessness and extreme poverty is that think about it like a Venn diagram, if you will, and take the different sets. You might have low wages, you might have lack of health care, lack of access to affordable housing, expensive child care costs, expensive costs for food, to your point about inflation. The meeting point in all of those issues is where we get extreme poverty and homelessness. That's where that occurs. That's where that happens. So in some respects, you know, we talk a lot about housing insecurity. We talk a lot about food insecurity. And I know you're going to have a guest on after me that talks about that item specifically. But in some respects, we need to stop thinking about these different insecurities in isolation and think about a more integrated whole and attacking poverty through the lens of a much more just economic system. So that's kind of the view that our agencies take, our member agencies, and that's kind of the view from the policy front that we're trying to pursue.
Oh, because there are so many overlapping areas that all connect into homelessness, and that right there can all drive toward extreme homelessness as these areas compound. Is that what you're trying to say?
Correct. Correct. We have a systems problem, and what we've done is we've set up sort of individual systems to deal with those individual problems rather than a comprehensive solution. For example, homelessness, we have sort of what is known as the homeless system, but that deals with people once they've fallen into homelessness. It doesn't look at a larger system to prevent that from beginning. Give you an example. Since 2007, over the last 15, 16, 17 years, we've reduced homelessness by a little over 800 people when we take the most basic count of what ho how homelessness is defined. So it's about 58, 59, 60 people a year if you do it in the aggregate. We've at that same time created about 2,700 units of housing with the homeless system. But that's the problem, is we're looking at these isolated systems rather than looking at the larger comprehensive view, which is higher wages, union membership, access to affordable health care. These are the things that we need to prevent that extreme poverty and homelessness from occurring to begin with. And we just haven't done that.
Brad Paul leads the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. As we dig into the causes of homelessness, you can join in with your questions. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Brad, recently here on the show, we talked with homeless services leader Ashley Wisniewski of Milwaukee. And here's Wisniewski talking about the needs of homeless people.
You have to find your food. You have to find something to wear. You have to find a place to charge your cell phone. But we talk about a lot on the team as a team. We can all be one paycheck away from homelessness, and we don't keep that out of our minds.
One paycheck away from homelessness, how much does a person need to be financially secure and escape the life of living paycheck to paycheck?
Well, first of all, she's right. That's the daily struggle that people are faced with. It's said in Wisconsin you need to make about $20 an hour working 40 hours a week in order to afford a two-bedroom apartment. Minimum wage, by comparison, in the state is $7.25 an hour. It's been that way for at least a decade. So you can see right there the math doesn't work. People are continually faced with those difficult decisions that you just played that clip from. Do I pay for food? Do I pay for childcare if I have a child? Do I pay the rent? Those are the difficult choices that are continually being presented to people and resulting in spikes in homelessness.
When you look specifically at housing, how is your group addressing the need for affordable housing? What are you working on?
Well, there's sort of two approaches. There is both trying to meet people's immediate needs, and then there are the longer-term solutions. On the immediate need front, we partnered with the state during the pandemic to help run the Wisconsin Emergency Rental Assistance Program. During the course of that, close to $300 million were distributed through our network in 68 out of 72 counties. That prevented mass eviction. And then over the longer term, we're trying to partner and develop longer-term solutions on permanent housing. This is where it gets tricky because the long arc of homeless policy, federal homeless policy, has been a retreat away from creating the permanent solutions. It's more of an immediate fix. It's trying to address sort of the most visible manifestations of homelessness, people you see on the street. It ignores the larger issue, much larger issue of homeless families who are living doubled up, who are living in motels. But that requires money to build these units. And we're now into 30 plus years of a federal retreat from those kind of investments. There's good work happening. The Evers administration, with bipartisan support, was able to get through $500 million for housing, workforce housing. There's good efforts happening at the local level as well, but these are just scratching the surface of what needs to be done. It's really a federal solution, just whatever the good efforts are at the state level. And the other thing I might add is, there's a lot of talk, hopeful talk, good positive talk about creating more workforce housing, which those bills that I just mentioned are designed to do. But left out of that discussion typically is what kind of worker? And what I mentioned earlier, that a minimum wage worker is making about $7 an hour, those are workers by any definition as well. And yet the housing stock that we're creating escapes that the reach of those households. So we need to have a really honest discussion about who is left out of the mix, who our economy does not serve, and what we do to fill that gap. And building workforce housing is good. We will continue to support that, but we also need housing for extremely low wage workers, and that just isn't happening at, really at any level.
Brad Paul leads the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. That's a network of local agencies working on solutions to reduce poverty and homelessness. Join this discussion by calling in with a question. You can add your thoughts at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the complexities of homelessness in Wisconsin, learning about new efforts underway at the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. 16 local agencies working together to help people get out of poverty and thrive. Call in with a question. You can share your views, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Brad Paul is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. Brad, let's touch down on childcare for a moment. Childcare can be a major financial burden. Forward Analytics estimates the average annual cost for infant childcare here in Wisconsin was more than $13,000 in 2021. Does the cost of childcare contribute to poverty?
Of course, it's huge. Increasingly so. You know, when we look at sort of a pie chart for household expenses, housing is typically one that takes up a disproportionate amount of a household's income. We're starting to see childcare occupy a greater piece of that overall pie. Our agencies are continually confronted with this. We have lots of people coming through the doors of CAP agencies who are just forced to make really terrible decisions about what they can do for their child's care, whether to pay the rent, whether to pay for other expenses. We know that Governor Evers had included a pretty ambitious set of proposals within the budget that were rejected, and we know that he utilized some money in the ARPA dollars, the federal dollars for COVID relief, to extend child care accounts program through, I believe, September of next year. So that's helpful. But like housing, this is something that society is going to have a reckoning with and figure out what level do we have ongoing permanent subsidies for low-income households.
You're a member of the State Research Advisory Committee for ALICE, which stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained. How does this resource provide financial stability to families?
Well, ALICE is a measure. It's a way to rethink in some respects what economic security is for households in Wisconsin. The federal poverty guidelines, the federal poverty threshold, was something that was set up in the mid to late 60s when the War on Poverty was launched. And this was really pegged to a household's ability to buy its groceries. And a small sort of crude measure was put in place of what was required to do that. It hasn't changed over the years much. And for a household of one, it's a little bit over $14,000, and then it goes up by sort of increments of about $5,000. What that all means is that the federal poverty level is extremely low and not representative of a larger segment of people in our state and elsewhere who struggle. So ALICE tries to look at all of the assets that go into a household, all of the expenses, and sort of look at what that means for Wisconsin households in real terms. And that number, that report that comes out every year, shows that more than a third of the Wisconsin families in this state struggle to meet their most basic needs. So we use that in tandem with the federal poverty threshold to sort of drive public policy and talk about what it is in real terms of what households are dealing with.
So a real specific economic measurement for Wisconsin households and what it costs to live, is that how
That's
you
correct.
Would see the Alice Essentials Index?
That's correct. Yeah. That's exactly correct.
Let's take a call now. Mike in Madison is here. Mike, hi.
Hi. Yes, I have a question for your guest. So we've tried the low-income housing large developments in the notorious Cabrini Green down in Chicago. Madison has multiple low-income units, either using Section 8 or the Section 42, which is very similar. And several of those developments, or at least one for sure, has been deemed a public nuisance because of all of the crime and police calls. How does your guest have a solution to just basically repeating the Cabrini-style housing developments to house low-income, and have we not learned, you know, from what happened there 60, 70 years ago?
Brad, go ahead.
Sure. Well, the unfortunate truth is we're not in any danger of repeating that, because in 1998, the federal government passed a law called the Faircloth Amendment, which actually prohibited the addition, the net addition of units for public housing. So we've actually been retreating very dramatically from public housing over the last 25, 30 years. No new units are being added in terms of a net gain. What I would also say is that we can still imagine, and we can still do public housing and social housing, however you want to define it. We can do that in ways that don't repeat, the sort of the notorious Cabrini Green example. There's scattered site options. There's different sort of architectures, if you will, both physical and social architectures of how we might do that. But the problem is, and this is, again, something that we just need to have an honest conversation about and get away from sort of the stereotypes, is that we have a large segment of our population who simply is cut out by the market, that the market is not providing housing, whether it's through a Section 8 voucher or any other number of ways to get people into affordable housing. The unit gap is just too great. There's 130,000 units that we would need to build in order to fill the demand for the extremely low-income household population in the state of Wisconsin. And the market isn't producing those kind of units. So we need to figure out a way to do that. And I don't think we really get very far when we sort of we cite the mistakes of the past when we know that there are alternative ways to create social housing for folks.
So is that a housing developer issue? Is that a state issue? Who should be at the table to figure this out, to find those and create those 130,000 units?
Well, it's a huge scale, as you've just said. I mean, it's massive. And it's not, you know, as I said earlier, there's good stuff happening with the state. The bills that were passed that the governor supported, there was bipartisan support that WEDA is now sort of charged with producing with a low-income housing tax credit. That's good. But that alone will only create, it's just a drop in the bucket of the total number of units we need. The solution really is federal, and this isn't unique to Wisconsin. The HUD budget, which has historically provided that gap, has provided housing for that low-income population, has just been eviscerated, starting in the early 80s, and we've never restored it. And it's what really launched modern homelessness. We also, as I just said, retreated entirely almost from public housing. So when you take that kind of investment away and don't replace it at scale, we are left with a major, major gap that I don't think the market has really stepped up to demonstrate that it can provide. So it's a federal solution, but of course, like anything, it requires state and local partners.
I want to bring up a listening session that your association held on homelessness services in Ashland County. And in our last minute together, we're going to talk with the leader of the BRIC Ministries, which provides food and emergency financial assistance. What does Ashland County need to support the homeless population?
Well, unfortunately, I wasn't at that session. I wish I was. My staff was there, and I wish they were out on the call with me to talk about what they heard. I know about 35, 40 people from across the community showed up, including the BRIC. I think what they need and what any community needs is the resources to identify and to address the needs, the particular needs of their community. There's, you know, the one thing that we've learned over the years is one size does not fit all. And what Ashland might need, looks very different from, say, what Milwaukee might need. These are different populations, you know, different infrastructures, and different, homelessness, which homelessness reveals itself very differently in different communities. Mm-hmm. The causes are similar, however. It's the lack of wages, it's the lack of health care, and it's a lack of affordable housing. And so that I can guarantee you is Ashland's needs, but how they produce the response that's necessary is going to be customized and localized.
Brad, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Brad Paul, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. There is more conversation ahead. We learn about fighting hunger in the northern Wisconsin counties of Ashland and Bayfield. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.